Jay Mariotti here, and life is good again for the man who keeps dipping his head into hell and back again. I should have learned my lesson the first time I pleaded for Tiger Woods to retire. He shut me up last April at Augusta National, and now he has embarrassed me again over in Japan by winning the Zozo Championship, which is not the Masters, but is his 82nd PGA Tour victory, which ties a record held forever by Sam Snead. When Woods had left knee surgery in August for the fifth time, I considered all of his various back ailments and health problems and just assumed, okay, he's about to turn 44. He already gave us that famous final scene of the movie with his fifth green jacket, so why deal with more pain and agony and missed cuts? But Woods looked remarkably good and healthy all week long in his first competitive event since that procedure on August the 20th, and he did not miss a beat even when play was halted and he was forced to go back to the hotel and sleep and come back Monday morning to protect his three-shot lead over the final seven holes and win that event. Suddenly, though, Woods goes through extensive therapy and stretching just to get ready for a round. Tiger is in the conversation again about contending at Augusta and winning more majors. Can you believe this? And I think Tiger Woods, the captain, will be naming Tiger Woods, the player, as a member of the U.S. President's Cup team. Here was the triumphant Woods.
You will be making your captain's picks next week, and there's been some talk about making yourself a pick. How impactful was Tiger Woods the player to Tiger Woods the captain with this win?
I think the player definitely got the captain's attention.
Finally, you have a lot, obviously, a lot more opportunities to win on the PGA Tour. But you're going to be 44 soon, and coming off everything you've been through with your body the last 2 years, do victories like this, are they a little sweeter now at this point in your career?
There's no doubt. I mean, because there's a point where I didn't know if I'd ever play again. I was just hoping to be able to walk normal again. To be able to go through all that to get to where I'm at now is I'm very appreciative. I know how it feels to have this game, what I felt like, is taken away from me, where I couldn't participate in the way that I wanted to. And I'm just so happy and so fortunate to be able to have this opportunity again.
When a rainstorm stranded Tiger and other players after they went to see Joker one night in Japan, you know what he did? He simply ducked into a Domino's pizza and shared some pies with the guys. Then he went out and beat them on the course, and the rest is history. Truly history. Victory number 82. Okay, I'm going to shut up now for good. This man can play competitive golf until his dying day.
Welcome to Unmuted with Jay Mariotti,
the podcast devoted to making sports talk great again.
Few have made more impact in sports media than Jay, and certainly no one has been called more names. Some actually true. He's the fiercely independent lightning rod who has produced massive ratings for ESPN's Around the Horn, made powerful waves as a national and major market talk host, and ruled Chicago as a columnist for 17 years.
For 17 years.
Unmuted is a topical whirlwind that doesn't stop until all the news is analyzed. So here he is, back from his day job in Hollywood.
Back from his day job in Hollywood.
For the next half hour or so. Or maybe 40 minutes, depending on the Lakers, Raiders, Trump, and Odell Beckham Jr.'s latest mood swing. The one, the only, Jay Mariotti.
A sport that desperately needs a warm and fuzzy story, baseball, instead will very likely have an unlikable champion. The Astros are the better team and showed it in a three-game sweep of the Nationals in Washington, where their bats awakened and their pitching staff, vulnerable as it was, shut down the Nats in the biggest moments, including five scoreless innings from the unheralded Jose Urquidy in Game 4, and then the usual great stuff from Gerrit Cole in Game 5. Then Houston gets a historic break. Come on! Max Scherzer, the Nationals' heart and guts, was scratched from his Game 5 start with neck and back spasms, and the Astros jumped predictably on sub-starter Joe Ross before President Trump took his seat to thundering boos, of course, and this chant from the liberal D.C. crowd. Can you imagine if Trump had thrown out the first pitch? So that baby shark tune has been silenced by the monsters of the sport, the Astros, and with Justin Verlander pitching at home on full rest and determined to reverse an 0-5 World Series record that doesn't reflect his Hall of Fame career at all, the Astros are indeed positioned to win their second World Series in 3 years. Not that America is rejoicing. First, you had the Patriots dynasty and its various scandals, and now you have the Astros, who were inspiring paranoia and accusations of sign-stealing and dirty tactics even before the stupidity of one Brandon Taubman and the organization's wretched handling of his expletive-laden diatribe against three female reporters. The Astros brought on their own public relations crisis by at first defending their assistant general manager after his senseless rant in defense of reliever Roberto Osuna, and then trying to cover up the episode by denying it ever happened and calling it, quote, misleading and completely irresponsible, end quote, before realizing indeed it did happen. And then the Astros retracted that statement. They eventually got around to firing Taubman, and owner Jim Crane wrote a letter apologizing to the Sports Illustrated writer Stephanie Epstein, though no one is certain, I'm still going to keep mentioning this, whether Taubman simply was defending Osuna amid clubhouse questioning about his recent struggles on the mound, or if he truly was mocking female reporters in the context of past allegations against Osuna involving domestic abuse. Though those charges were dropped. It's an important point here that everybody's missing here. Taubman might even have a legal case because the Astros were in such a rush to purge this distraction, down 2-0 in the series at the time, that they didn't give him due process. Point being here, I don't know what that clown was doing at that point in the locker room saying such things. I know it was a clubhouse celebration, everybody partying and drinking in there, but those reporters are trying to work. They weren't even talking to him, and he decides to go off on them for whatever, and I'm kind of giving him the possible benefit of the doubt that there could be a question about intent. Nonetheless, they had to get him out of there, maybe suspend him, give him his due process, then fire him. But the Astros were panicking. They're down 2-0 in the series. Let's get this guy out of here. Well, the Astros are not impressing me. They impress me the way they piece together a ball club with analytics and their manager, and in the way that once upon a time they tanked but then turned it into a mini dynasty. But the way they do business behind the scenes is revolting, and they deserve all the criticism certainly they're getting right now. With Taubman gone and the team out of that Houston pressure cooker, the Astros relaxed in D.C. and took control. Here was manager A.J. Hinch, confident even as the Nationals do trot out Steven Strasburg to face Verlander in Game 6 Tuesday night.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's, you know, we've got a win left. You know, we know how quickly things can turn where momentum can shift in a series, especially in a series against a quality team like the Nats. So we're not going to take anything for granted. It is nice to go home. You know, I don't really want to talk about a second game. I'd like to wrap this up as soon as possible. And we've got Justin Verlander on the mound, and that brings a lot of confidence to our clubhouse. But their guy's pretty good too. So we're going to have to bring our best after a long flight. We have a day off tomorrow. We'll get ready to play on Tuesday. But our confidence level is good. We're going home to play in front of one of the best crowds in the playoffs and in the World Series, and hopefully get one more win.
And here was Scherzer, whose neck locked up so badly Sunday morning that he was unable to dress himself.
I'm as disappointed as I possibly can be to be on that pitch tonight. I mean, that's Game 5 of the World Series. I've pitched through so much crap in my career that, I mean, that would be easy to pitch through at this point. This is literally impossible to do anything with. So,
in World Series history, 30 of the previous 45 teams that turned a 2-2 tie into a 3-2 lead, went on to win the championship. The Astros, to a country's chagrin, are about to become number 31, all of which is happening amid historically poor ratings and some very long games. To the NFL, where Drew Brees, like all the greats, knows his body better than any doctor or coach. And sure enough, even if he could have rested his surgically repaired throwing thumb a few more weeks, Brees demanded to return and, of course, threw three touchdown passes in the Saints' romp over Arizona. Here was Brees back in charge as Teddy Bridgewater inherits that sideline ball cap.
I was hoping this would be the week. You know, this was kind of the week that I had in my mind from the moment that I got hurt. I think the doctors and everybody were saying after the bye week, but I was trying to fast track that as much as possible. But understanding that, you know, there's a healing process that needs to take place, but man, let's try to push this as much as we can. And, you know, a lot of it was just, you know, ability to get a grip on the ball and be able to throw the ball accurately and just, you know, be myself and not think about it and be able to play confidently. And so as soon as I could grip it and rip it, then, you know, I wanted to play. I wanted to be out there with my teammates.
But there is competition in the NFC for the Saints, primarily in San Francisco, where the 49ers are forcing us to take them very seriously after their demolition of the Panthers. In the middle of it all, as usual, rookie Mahler, Nick Bosa, who had three sacks and an interception, and just might be the league's best disruptor already outside of Aaron Donald. The fans who are chanting his name now at the stadium have forgotten his draft time thoughts that disparaged the city of San Francisco, remember that, and his previous tweet supporting Trump and the crusade of Colin Kaepernick. If he can rush the passer and wreak havoc, they don't care what he tweets. Here was Bosa enjoying the love-in as he left the field.
Still undefeated. Thank you to the faithful for showing up. Let's go.
And 51 points in that game? For a so-called system quarterback, Jimmy Garoppolo does have a way of getting his team into the end zone often. We'll find out more about the Niners and the NFC when they host the Seahawks and then the Packers in the next few weeks and their MVP candidates, Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers. The Packers taking advantage of Patrick Mahomes' injury to beat the Chiefs in Kansas City, meaning the Niners, Saints, and Packers are angling for home field advantage in that conference, and all three of those teams are developing huge home field advantages. In particular, the Saints, the Packers have always had theirs, but the 49ers have had a weak history in that stadium. They're starting to develop it there now. They haven't lost a game. Some are projecting a first-ever Saints-Patriots Super Bowl and a collision of the sport's finest two coaches, Sean Payton and Bill Belichick. As for the Patriots, Tom Brady is old enough to be Baker Mayfield's father. Just look up their ages. And as Brady continues to feed stories about his uncertain future with vague comments, he keeps doing just enough with limited weapons as Belichick's defense delivers a monstrously memorable season. Before the Patriots blistered Mayfield in what has become a disastrous season for the Browns and their inept head coach, Freddie Kitchens, Brady went out of his way to make it known that his relationship with Belichick is terrific. So why all these inane stories that Tom Brady actually would leave the Patriots after a possible seventh championship and then sign at age 43 with the Chicago Bears or some other team? What? It's a crazy world. It's not that crazy. When the season is over and Brady can void his contract, then we'll let the speculation run rampant. If anything, as I said last week, I think he would retire. If he wins Super Bowl number 7, goes out victoriously, greatest quarterback of all time, why would he linger and go play for the Bears or the Broncos or what? Makes no sense whatsoever. Until then, all of this talk, it's just toying with us. He's toying with us. The chatter is toying with us. Just ignore it as the Patriots toy with the league. And their competition is dwindling in the AFC. Even with Mahomes, the Chiefs don't have the defense to hang with New England, while the Texans suffered yet another monumental blow as J.J. Watt, one of the sport's proud statesmen and good people, suffered his latest season-ending injury, this time a torn pec muscle. You have to feel for this guy. How sad that this physical specimen has lost so much time in his career due to health issues, and that, you know, he's probably never going to play in a Super Bowl. Coach Bill O'Brien cannot get a break either, but he paused to pay tribute to Watt.
That's an easy one to answer, right? He's a great football player. He's an even better guy. You know, and unfortunately, we've been in this position before, you know, and I think we've got some guys here, a lot of different guys. Not going to be one guy that takes his place if that's the case, but, you know, we'll miss him. No, I mean, that's obvious.
In Chicago, the Bears' nightmarish season continues with an old theme. The kicker and the turnover-prone quarterback blew the game and wasted a fine defensive performance. As the Cody Parkey ghost lingered at Soldier Field, Eddie Pinheiro pushed a 41-yard attempt wide left in the final seconds, giving the Chargers a 17-16 victory. That was preceded by a fumble and interception by you-know-who, the inept Mitchell Trubisky. Matt Nagy was coach of the year last season. Now they want to run him out of town. What happened to this guy? He made a decision in the final minute Sunday to have Trubisky take a knee with 43 seconds left instead of trying to improve the Bears' field position and make the attempt easier for Pinheiro in the very situation that paralyzes Chicago, that entire city, and any kicker they end up bringing in there. When asked about that decision, Nagy got snotty with the reporter. Why get snotty? It's real simple. You 43 seconds left, try to advance the football for a play or two.
Walk us through your thought process on taking the knee before
the last. Yeah, I mean, I'm not even going to get into that. I have zero thought of running the ball and taking the chance of fumbling the football, or, you know, they know you're running the football, so you lose 3-4 yards. So that wasn't even in our process as coaches to think about that. You know, we were in field goal range before the scramble, and then we got the scramble. So that didn't even cross my mind.
No thought of throwing it there either.
Throw the football?
Yeah. Just to try to get a little closer.
throw the football right then and there. What happens if you take a sack or there's a fumble?
You lose the game.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. So, no, there was zero thought of that. I'll just be brutally clear. Zero thought of throwing the football. Zero thought of running the football. You understand me? That's exactly what it was. So it's as simple as that.
The self-destructive Bears are now last in the NFC North, and as is the norm throughout their history, they have no answer at quarterback. What are they going to do? Trade for another bust, such as Marcus Mariota, or hope for a break in a draft not loaded with quarterbacks? Their best shot is in free agency, where Bridgewater will be available. I know that you're not talking about a Pro Bowl quarterback, but Bridgewater can come in and be efficient and not turn over the ball. Maybe they make a trade for Nick Foles, but he can't stay healthy. You don't want Cam Newton. They're running out of answers. They're going to waste that defense, and same old Bears. And then the fans will keep talking about 1985. That's 35 years ago, folks. And I think at least 10 of those players have worked in Chicago media since then. It's just time to let that stay in 1985, okay? Indeed, their season is dying a slow death as the Packers and Vikings seem playoff-bound, and even the Lions are playing well, with Matthew Stafford enjoying a career season months after his wife Kelly underwent brain surgery. That is becoming a wonderful story. Rooting for the Lions to maybe sneak into the playoffs. I don't think they will, but I'm rooting for Stafford. And if Sam Darnold saw ghosts last Monday night, now he's seeing his career fading away. He played poorly again. What a horrible year this guy's had. He has mononucleosis, then he sees ghosts on Monday night, and now this, 3 interceptions, 8 sacks, and he's getting no help from his line, but he's a complete mess, and Adam Gase was the wrong coach for Darnold, in that Jets situation. You think Le'Veon Bell wishes he signed with the 49ers? Oops. And the Eagles saved their season from a crash with a resounding victory over a puzzling Buffalo team. You could scratch the Bills as an AFC contender. Is anybody going to challenge the Patriots? I've mentioned a 19-0 possibility. I mean, they could clinch a playoff berth in a couple of weeks, and they could have home field clinched at Thanksgiving. At this rate, if you look at the weak competition in that conference, how do they lose to the Eagles? Think about the Eagles recently. Two blowout losses, criticism from anonymous players about things going on in the locker room, and a rip job by former cornerback Orlando Scandrick, who said they are, quote, still living off that Super Bowl high, unquote, I think emphasis on high, 2 years ago. The Eagles were on the verge of a collapse, a mutiny, and then the defense finally shows up and punishes Josh Allen in the Bills' running game. The NFC is loaded with contenders. In any power ranking, Patriots 1, and then pick your teams 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 in the NFC. And then who would show up then in the AFC? Indy? Houston? Who? To the NBA, where fans who paid outrageous prices for seat licenses and tickets in the new Chase Center might be rioting before too long. The Warriors appear to have sold these people a bill of goods in that new arena, looking not only like a team that won't make the playoffs, but a team that has completely lost its mojo and might lose, 50 games in the treacherous Western Conference. Even with Steph Curry and Draymond Green still around, they play no defense, they have no direction, and they're dealing with a wretched D'Angelo Russell, a bunch of raw newcomers who don't know what they're doing, and, of course, the absence of Klay Thompson until next season. Coach Steve Kerr looks like he saw a ghost as well. He's acknowledging the Warriors are facing this new reality, including his being locked out of his office twice in that new arena. Green, who signed a long-term extension when he could have waited for free agency, is not dealing with this well. You knew that.
The reality of it is we're just not capable of doing that right now. I would like to see us play harder. You know, that'll help a little bit, but the reality is we suck right now. And, you know, hopefully we'll get better. We'll continue working at it and try to get better, but we're just not that good right now. And I don't know what better way to frame that for you or kind of tell it. You know, I could try in Spanish, but I ain't really that good at Spanish. That's really the best way I can tell it to you right now.
And Warriors hater Charles Barkley is piling on as well, having no mercy on Thompson during this interview.
Rush back to try and go to a sixth straight finals if I'm not 100%, because our window to win another championship, I think, is open for the next 5-6 years.
Go ahead, Charles.
Well, number one, I hope you get back soon, but you're just wrong.
What is he wrong about?
Well, I think they won the Shet.
Why?
Well, because I don't think they can score enough. I want to make my other prediction, and I was wrong before the game.
Mm-hmm.
I said they were going to be the 7-8 seed. They're not going to make the playoffs because they just can't score enough. You know,
you could tell after one half of basketball.
Yes. Playing with the best defensive team, the Clippers.
No, but not just that, Candace. You know, when you look at your team, you say, okay, Steph can get me 30. D'Angelo can get me 20. But Draymond, even though he's a heck of a player, he only going to get me 15. That's not enough in the Western Conference this year.
At some point, I'm pretty sure Kevin Durant will pile on too, perhaps with a retort that Green should not have called him a bitch, quote-unquote, in that infamous rant that led to Durant's departure and the end of that dynasty. And all those fans in San Francisco, very pricey city, who ponied up for insanely expensive seats, I know nobody's feeling sorry for Zuckerberg and Google and tech and all those people in those suites. But I can say this about all of them, even though they just write it off. Suckers! Anthony Davis says there's nothing wrong with his shoulder, though he did grab it several times Sunday night. in a Laker victory over Charlotte. Davis and LeBron James answering criticism about their late no-shows against the Clippers last week with an intimidating 1-2 performance against Utah. And then LeBron, who now is more or less the point guard, just as Kawhi Leonard is for the Clippers, had a dozen assists Sunday night and enjoyed setting up Dwight Howard. Dwight Howard lives? 16 points, 10 rebounds, 8 for 8. Dwight Howard? Okay, they were playing Charlotte. But for the moment, Laker fans aren't quite as worried as they were last week that the Clippers will be taking over Staples Center. Too many fans and also supposedly savvy media people are jumping to immediate conclusions here in October. Remember the rampant thought a few days ago that the Clippers were destined, hell-bent for an NBA title? Well, they lost to the woeful Phoenix Suns, who are without DeAndre Ayton after his PED suspension, and already Leonard and load management are an issue. With 4:15 left in that game, trailing by 12, Coach Doc Rivers pulled Leonard because, quote, "I didn't think we were going to win," end quote. What? They're playing the Suns, who don't have Ayton. The coach who teaches grit and never say die defense was quitting against a bad team with more than 4 minutes left? No, he was managing Kawhi's time load. Without Kawhi, the Clippers instantly battled back anyway. They pulled to within 7, but Rivers kept sitting Kawhi. He waited until the 1:34 mark, brings him in, and by then the cause was lost. What are you doing, Doc?
We're trying to keep him in that 30-minute range, 35. We could go to 35 if we want to. Honestly, I didn't think we were going to win the game. You know, we could have kept him in. 35 is a lot of minutes, and we could play him that if we want. I just chose not to. I didn't think I wasn't going to keep him out there when we're not playing right as a whole, as a group. So why keep him out there, you know?
If it's still a little weird wrapping your arms around the idea of a Clippers championship, this team is deep and determined and usually wants it badly. That was surprising. They laid an egg. They didn't bring it. They usually bring it all the time. Getting a little cocky, I guess. Seeing all the TV shows, reading all the stuff. They're great, though. And Kawhi is now playing the all-encompassing role of scorer, playmaker, and defender. Meaning he's the best player in the world, not Giannis, not LeBron, it's Kawhi. Leonard already thrilled with the camaraderie created by Rivers and the holdover talent. Everybody wants Kawhi and Paul George, when he eventually makes his debut, to take over this team, the locker room, the games, the league. Hey, take it over. L.A., you know, as I told you last week, this is a Laker town. It's not going to change. There are still thoughts that Ballmer will pick this thing up and take it to Seattle. Nothing shocks me, but he's trying to get an arena built in Inglewood. There is opposition to that. Somebody is going to implode this year, either the Clippers or the Lakers. I still say it's more likely to be the Lakers, but after the first week of the season here, both of these teams are very impressive. And anybody who thought the Rockets finally would take advantage of Golden State's demise now has seen Houston's new reality. James Harden and Russell Westbrook already are arguing on the court, with Harden making no field goals in the second half of a bad loss to Milwaukee. Westbrook is claiming it's just their way of communicating. Nobody's buying that, though. I don't think anybody wants to watch these two guys argue all season.
The animation is... Because we were talking about something, but don't deep dive too much into it. Like I told you, there's nothing that nobody around the world, media, anybody, to be able to get in between what we have, because we had it for so long. So the more you keep asking, the more it ain't going to work.
Russ did have an impressive triple-double in a win over New Orleans, but is Harden's game going to suffer in the presence of Westbrook? Have you seen Harden's numbers from three-point land this season? Atrocious. Outside the Toyota Center, pro-Hong Kong protesters are supporting the infamous pro-democracy tweet by the Rockets' general manager, Daryl Morey, that likely will cost the NBA billions of dollars. And now you have owner Tillman Fertitta actually liking social media posts demanding Maury's firing. I think Fertitta's a lot like Adam Silver. He wants it both ways. He's going to use social media to like. What is he doing? I can tell you what Fertitta is doing. He paid $2.2 billion for that team, and he just saw a big chunk of that value evaporate because China is evaporating for what had been the NBA's favorite team for the Chinese people, the Houston Rockets, Yao Ming. I think I wouldn't be shocked if Fertitta puts this franchise up for sale. It's a critical year. People are tired of this team, so much promise, and Harden goes off in the regular season and gags in the postseason. Now you have Westbrook. Mike D'Antoni's contract wasn't extended. I could see the Rockets imploding and certainly not coming back the way the Houston Astros have. Kyrie Irving can score all the points he wants this season, but the fact is the Nets are 1-2 and giving up 123 a game. And who blocked Irving's shot at the end of regulation Sunday? Ja Morant, who had 30 in the Memphis victory, might be rookie of the year. If Zion Williamson misses too much time, Morant has arrived. And Curry now has serious competition for the title of most electric player. Trae Young is playing like a Steph clone, triggering these point flurries for the Hawks and making shots from ridiculous angles and places, such as the logo near midcourt in the Atlanta arena. And he's ramping up his playmaking game for a Hawks team that might surprise in the East. I love this. I was a critic of Trae Young. I said he's like a Steph wannabe. No, he is Steph right now. And look at it this way. If DeAndre Ayton was taking money under the table to play college basketball, why wouldn't he test positive for a diuretic? Diuretic, of course, masks performance-enhancing drugs. And then see this stall his development and then stall the development of the Suns because he has been banned for 25 games. Ayton is calling this a case of, quote, unintentional ingestion, unquote. Oh, you just, you know, out of nowhere, inhale this diuretic as part of your day in the desert air. Just own it, big guy. And the downside of Supermax mania is that NBA superstars have to deal with months of speculation, causing a distraction to teams and fan bases. Giannis Antetokounmpo was quoted in a Harvard University case study that he might leave the Bucks and turn down the $247 million Supermax if they underperform this season. Now, Giannis is denying that vehemently, and if this sounds like another drama similar to those of Durant and LeBron and Kyrie and all the other NBA mercenaries, that's exactly what it is. Let's see how the Bucks, the city of Milwaukee and Giannis handle it, because there are two teams here in L.A. and one in San Francisco that might interest Antetokounmpo. Wait, maybe scratch that team in San Francisco. First, the Sooner Schooner toppled to the ground. Then the Sooners themselves gagged away a spot in the college football playoff. Fumbles, drop snaps, penalties. The offense did nothing to help a suddenly soggy defense, and I don't want to hear about a recovered onside kick that was reversed against Oklahoma and spoiled a late rally. You do not lose to Kansas State in the cushy Pac-12 and allow four rushing touchdowns by quarterback Skylar Thompson and expect to get favors from a selection committee that now is looking at the obvious premier team, Ohio State, which is spectacular on both sides of the football and reveled in an all-time performance by defensive end Chase Young. Did you see him the other day? More on him in a second here. You've also got unbeaten Clemson, which finally had a convincing rout. And then you could have both the winner and loser of the upcoming Alabama-LSU showdown. Oklahoma had to go unbeaten, I believe, to assure itself a playoff berth, and for Jalen Hurts to win the Heisman. Now I think those shots are gone. Instead, assuming that Tua Tagovailoa and his injured ankle return with a vengeance for the LSU game, Tua and Joe Burrow will be vying for the Heisman in that game two Saturdays from now in Tuscaloosa, though you also could make a case for Young, who had four sacks, five tackles for losses, and two forced fumbles in quieting Wisconsin and Jonathan Taylor. Coach Ryan Day has very quickly reduced Urban Meyer to a memory in Columbus, and Day says Young is better than, yeah, Nick Bosa. And with three Heisman candidates in Justin Fields, J.K. Dobbins, and Young, I don't see Ohio State losing to Penn State or Michigan in back-to-backs to end November. Somehow the Ohio State program has improved without Meyer, and more importantly, that program is drama-free now. Meyer was working that game as a Fox Sports analyst, and Day is ever thankful for the opportunity to finish what Meyer hadn't done in recent years, win a national championship.
Yeah, that was a really cool moment for me. I owe everything to he and to Shelly and Nina and I for the opportunity that he gave me and my family to be here, and just want to make them proud and go out there and play really, really hard, really, really tough, and represent the Buckeyes the way that he did when he was here. And, boy, it's hard to follow up a guy who is one of the best college football coaches in the history of the game. Just is. But try not to worry about that and try to just make everybody in Buckeye Nation and obviously Coach Meyer proud.
LSU and Alabama both have open weeks before their showdown, which could feature the nation's two top-ranked teams. And LSU, which was averaging 50 a game before struggling against the tough Auburn defense, does have a legitimate case for number one, having beaten three top 10 teams at the time the games were played, whereas Alabama has played only one ranked team, Texas A&M, while Clemson has zero wins over ranked teams. So yeah, right now, I would put Ohio State one, but if you look at schedules, yes, LSU number one in the AP poll. So make sure you pronounce the head coach's name right, Ed Ogeron, good old boy from the bayou. Now it's time for The Buzz, our deep dive into sports and life with Chris joining the program. Chris, given how the Astros so abhorrently handled the Brandon Taubman outburst, does that incident alone make them an unpopular champion, which is about the last thing baseball needs amid poor ratings and long games and all of its other existential issues?
Well, Jay, the last time we did this show, wasn't I talking about the national sweeping? Oh, how things change in sports and how things change in baseball. And this is probably a great story for baseball to see this happen, where the Astros come back and potentially, I mean, right up there with the Red Sox and the Yankees from the 90s. I mean, it just, the whole story of them coming back, potentially going four in a row. Now I'm pulling for that. I flop for the best story. And I also like a little mayhem. As for that whole mess, the Brandon Taubman mess, here's the thing. They got out. They took care of him. They got rid of him. They did try to smear a reporter, but they've since apologized for trying to smear her, and they realized that didn't work. And I think when it's all said and done, if they pull off this sort of bizarro sweep and win four games in a row, I think that people might just forget, because the story is that enchanting, especially this Astros team, which we've already been enchanted once when they beat my Dodgers a few years back. So it's a good story, Jay. And as we know, we like good stories.
And Chris, how happy are you for your guy, Tiger Woods? And you were the one who predicted he would win the Masters in 2019. Will he win the Masters again in 2020?
Jay, I will predict him to win the Masters every year until he stops playing. I love it. I love number 82. I love the fact that yet again he comes back after surgery. It's written into the stars, Jay. And again, we have to enjoy the few wins he's going to do every year and these sort of Cinderella-type wins, right? Like, he comes back. He's in China. Number 82, boom. Could he win at Augusta again? He's not going to win at the U.S. Open, not the British Open. And I know the Open Championship, or the PGA. He's going to win at the Masters, and I'm still predicting him in 2020, Jay.
And Chris, are you like me having a hard time grasping the idea that Tom Brady would play for another team at age 43?
I don't think here's the thing. I think Bill Belichick would love for him to play with another team, because all Bill Belichick wants in the world is to be able to win a Super Bowl without Tom Brady. That's his goal. And he wants to be able to show us that he can do that, which I think he can. I can't imagine him playing for another team. He's just that number 12. When you see that number 12 on Sunday, especially this season, and really, let's just be honest, ever, it's funny, they showed a stat during the game yesterday that there's a 100-win differential with him at home. I think it was 118-18 or something in that nature, that in his entire career, he's only lost 18 times, I believe, at home. That's insane. The amount of winning that number 12 has done, and you see him in that Patriot 12 on a Sunday, you just know it's not going to be good for the other team for the most part. And again, stats and math and analytics, Jay, that would all show is that. And again, I don't know if I've told you this or told anybody this. I'm rooting for the Patriots this year. I'm rooting for perfection. Why? Because it's sports anarchy, Jay.
Okay, thanks, Chris, which brings us to quickies, which are just that. Quick! Check your heartbeat if you don't feel good for Markelle Fultz, who might yet return from NBA flopdom. The number one overall pick in 2017, Fultz literally forgot how to shoot a basketball in Philadelphia, and the 76ers were relieved to trade him to Orlando. But under the underrated coach Steve Clifford, Fultz sparked the magic in their season opener and will be part of the regular rotation for a likely playoff team in the East. I could imagine a Magic Sixers first round series. And fooey on the blokes who said Christian Pulisic, the finest men's soccer talent ever produced by America, was flopping in the English Premier League. Pulisic scored 3 goals after being handed a start, leading Chelsea over Burnley. When he wasn't getting minutes earlier this season, the Euro pundits said the American with the $64 million pound transfer fee was too soft. Well, they can stuff that hat trick up their keisters. And yet another football league wants to revolutionize sports by turning the fans into play callers. The FCFL, the fan-controlled football league, starts next summer in Las Vegas with teams playing 7-on-7 inside a customized arena attached to what else? A casino with games exactly 1 hour long. The plan is to stream the games digitally via the platform Twitch. I think Bezos owns that. And allow fans to control the play calling by vote. What? The players are going to stand there in a huddle and wait for the vote to be tabulated? What are they going to do? Hey, guys, I know of a strip joint over on Flamingo. This is not going to work. But here's what's interesting about it. Yet again, we have investors trying to make money off football. As the NFL laughs, just as the NFL laughed at the short-lived Alliance of American Football, and will laugh when the reimagined XFL fails. Even Antonio Brown tweeted yesterday that the XFL will fail in a month. I think that's the first thing Brown got right in this calendar year.
And now a final Mariotti commentary too hot for ESPN, too smart for the internet, and too chill for political activism. Take it away, Jay.
Yes, horses keep dying here in California, with Santa Anita suffering its 5th fatality of the shortfall season last week after 30 horses died during the winter spring meet at the famed track. I'm at a complete loss for words as to why they are allowed to keep dying. I guess abominable, sickening, criminal come to mind. This has been a horrific story for months, yet despite threats by Governor Gavin Newsom to shut down the sport, the races inexplicably go on. Why? The powers that be in racing wouldn't want a mere 30 deaths to interfere with the Super Bowl of their sport, the Breeders' Cup, which comes to Santa Anita this week. I'm tired of hearing about investigations by the California Horse Racing Board or the L.A. District Attorney's Office that obviously aren't being conducted with enough urgency when horses continue to die. Newsom has been quick to join hands with LeBron James in attempts to pay college athletes, even appearing on LeBron's HBO program. I have a better idea for Governor Gavin. Shut down the Breeders' Cup. I mean, right now, today, and end the dreadful possibility of yet another fatality happening during this showcase event. That's our show. For our producer and editor, Chris, I am Jay, reminding you to never, ever let anybody mute you in life.